So welcome back to Pax Europiana, the EU Days, and this is now about the EU Day for the memorial and the Day of Sorrow. This is a Day of Sorrow, to be concrete, yeah. It's the Day of Sorrow for the Kosovo genocide. This is the 15th of January, and it's the day in 1999 when the Račak massacre took place, and 45 innocent civilians, children and families, were massacred by the Serb anti, it's not an anti-terror milit, it's a kind of a brutal secret police which has already a reputation of terror and genocide in the Croatian and Bosnian wars. And it was sent to Kosovo to kill, basically. Because the name is always confusing when you call something an anti-terror that sounds like positive, nobody wants terror. Nobody wants to a terrorist, yeah. And so it's a misnomer. It's a misnomer, artificial misnomer, because what this group was doing was terror. They were the terrorists. This was state terrorism against innocent civilians, with the idea and with the concept to strike terror in the heart of the citizens of that state. Yeah, because at that time in 1999, Kosovo was part of Yugoslavia. That was the Yugoslavian state in 99. It was still with Montenegro, still with Kosovo, and Serbia proper, obviously. That was still called Yugoslavia at that time. The other republics have already left and went on for a better life, but Kosovo and Montenegro were too weak to and had too less international support. Yeah. And so the whole strategy of Milosevic in 99, after 1 year of already guerrilla resistance and enormous brutality by the Serb terror regime, and then it was like this that he started to double down, it's called. Double down is trying to really start the year 99 with a lot of brutality. Sent his most brutal special forces into Kosovo to commit some massacres in the hope that many of the Albanians will choose to move and to flee and to run away into Macedonia and Albania. Because the whole concept is called, which is often the case, it's the concept, I want land, but I don't like the people. Because in a real serious state, when you have land and people, you have also the obligation to care, to provide for the welfare of the people. But in the case of the Serbian state under Milosevic, which was a terror regime, it was very clear they wanted Kosovo for historic reasons and also to have land. Yeah, and that's always a nice thing to have, to extend your territory and also to govern more natural resources. But the people is, of course, a different thing. And they never wanted the Albanian population, never ever, since 1912. And they had consistently abused that population. 1912 is the year when Serbia has basically conquered this part of European Turkey in October, in part of the First Balkan War. And basically, from that moment on, there were massive atrocities against everybody who looked Turkish, Albanian, Muslim, and it was a genocide which started already on basically the war started 8th of October 1912. Then it was 22nd of October they were in Pristina, and continuously there was genocide and mass executions and reprisal actions against the native population, which always has lived there. They were the inhabitants of this region and not the Serbs, because this territory was since 500 years before under Turkish Ottoman control. And so the situation was, it started in 1912. Then, of course, there were the various events of the Second World, of the First and Second World War. I don't want to go in this podcast in the details, but it was terrible, basically. So there was always, whenever there was control by Serbia of the region of Kosovo, of that land, it was basically suppression, genocide, apartheid, and that was continuously until the year 96, no, 66, to be concrete. I don't want to make mistakes. 1912 to 1966, with the interruption of the terrible times of the horrors of the Second World War and the First World War. But obviously for the Kosovo Albanian population, it was always horrorful and terrible until 66, when the Serb military commander, Secret Service Chief Ranković, he was replaced under pressure from the US. Because why? Because basically in the year 65, there was the first Yugoslavian bankruptcy. It's marketed as the so-called hard dinner policy. It's very funny from currency politics. Yeah. It's a hard dinner policy. That's what Tito called it. But in reality, he was bankrupt. And he had even to go deeper into American debt because he was obviously opposed to the Soviet Union. And he, after the 48 split, so he was an American client state, fully dependent on American debt. And in 65, he had to devalue. He was basically bankrupt and he got more American funding in the Cold War. That was a good strategy for the Americans to buy Tito into compliance. And they also enforced a little bit of a softer line towards the minorities. That's why Ranković was removed. I'm sure that Tito didn't communicate it that way in Yugoslavia in the way, but, you know, economics and fiscal situation and current account matter very much for politicians and for political leaders. And that was exactly the reason, I'm absolutely confident. So there happened somehow 15 softer years for the Kosovo Albanians. Softer years, it's not that they lived in any kind of nice situation. Kosovo was completely underdeveloped. Most of the infrastructure, which is today in Kosovo in the year 2021, it was built by the international community after 1999. There was almost no water, no electricity infrastructure to speak of. Everything was rotten to the core and the underinvestment was huge. Yeah? And the poverty was not only a product of the recent war or of the apartheid regime in the 80s. No, no, this is a long-standing neglect of the Yugoslavian authority for that region, especially because of the ethnic complexity and setup of Kosovo. So what happened then? In 80, obviously, Tito died. And then later there was a power struggle and Tito had in these last 15 years a more of an internal balancing act. He was very much concerned about, you know, make it soft and make it nice in order to keep the American money flowing. But in 80, after his death and the resulting power struggle, the Serb nationalists in Belgrade, they withdrew the independence, not independence, the autonomy status of Kosovo. And then came in 81 the so-called Kosovo Spring. It's called a student protest, but basically it was the reaction of the Kosovo population against the end of autonomy and, of course, the terrible living conditions. I mean, this was Abchang poverty. And obviously they understood that now after Tito and after this kind of 15 softer years, there will be now harder times again. So when that exactly came, there was again a martial law imposed in 81. And then basically it was a time best described like ethnic apartheid. So there was a small group of Serbian migrants into Kosovo and Serbian officials which were dominating the region. And the rest of the people was excluded from the public life, from public administration, from public schooling. And they basically organized everything themselves in a very brutal kind of shadow situation where they basically had to pay for their own private schooling in Albanian because the rest of the schooling was all in Serbian and they didn't want to go. And it was a real kind of like in South Africa. I think in the world the best comparison is that they were treated like the black people in apartheid Africa until 94. And this kind of racial distinction between Serbs and Albanians and the exclusion from the institutions, this was going on and the whole of the 80s until basically continued in the 90s, obviously, from 81 to 99. Kosovo, it's important to understand, was already trying to get independence. At the same time, all other Yugoslavian, ex-Yugoslavian republics got independent. And they also declared their independence in September 91. But unfortunately, the world was not ready for that because there was a lack of information, a lack of access, a lack of understanding. Powerful Serbian arguments and lobbies in the West, which are still prevalent today. And so basically this was one of the non-recognized independence declarations in the history of in the world, and it led to a lot of tragedies. Yeah, because 8th of September 91, Macedonia declared, yes, and it was then accepted. Kosovo on the 20th of September followed suit, 22nd of September, the First Republic was declared, but nobody recognized it but Albania. And so the mess started, and it was a real big crisis. Then, of course, the Bosnian War started, and the Kosovo Albanians, they had not a lot of friends. They were economically very poor, and they also didn't have a lot of weapons. And they knew the power of the National Army of Yugoslavia, which at that time was a powerful and dangerous foe to have. They knew they will be destroyed in case of confrontation, because it was contrary to in the situation in Croatia and Bosnia, because Croatia, due to its strategic situation at the Adriatic Sea and its strong links with Germany, Austria and America and Italy, had, of course, international access, international recognition, international support and also international access to money and weapons, and could defend itself against the onslaught of the Yugoslavian army, and did successfully liberate itself, and it was also recognized, and it could also later, with the help of American advisors, intervene in the Bosnian War and establish some kind of equilibrium, which is up to date, this kind of half-half situation, which was basically imposed by the Americans during the Dayton Agreement in 95, after the first military intervention, which has ended the Bosnian War in August 95, after massive Serbian Milosevic atrocities. Always when I talk about Serbia, let me make it very clear, it was the Milosevic regime. I have many friends from Serbia. They are great people. I know many of them personally, and I like many of them really as friends. But in this terror regime is a terror regime, and it was the Milosevic terror regime, and it was defeated in Bosnia in 95. But Bosnia ended in a way in a kind of American compromise, which was seen from the distance as fair. That is another debate. But obviously the Kosovo Albanians saw all that, what is happening, and also Milosevic drew its conclusion and saw that he can get away with quite a lot if he is determined. And American and Western power will not confront him until he went too far. So then, obviously, there was the start of the guerrilla activities of the UÇK. I don't want to belittle that. These were many heroes, and it was terrible atrocities against them. But, you know, what really happened is that the Milosevic regime, in my view, they really tried to use this minor guerrilla activities to settle it once and for all and go all in order to drive away the Albanians from Kosovo. That was basically the strategy ultimately, strike terror and fear in the heart of the Kosovo Albanians in the hope they will be ready to leave, but they were not, or in case to drive them into Albania proper or into Macedonia, where also a lot of Albanians live, and to get rid of them basically that way and have the land for resettlement. I mean, that is what it was. And that is what the West was then confronting. And it was actually a big decision. Nobody was easy to use military power in 99. And it was, I think, one of the more complicated things in Western history to use this form of military power to confront Milosevic, but I'm very proud about it. Yeah? It was long overdue. A lot of people could have been saved when Western powers would have intervened earlier. And also a lot of Serbian lives could have been saved when there would have been more clarity. We should have recognized Kosovo already in 91, I made that point. Yeah? But also in 95, it was very clear that the Kosovo situation must be settled. Yeah? It could have been part of the Dayton Agreement, yeah? Because there was already military power deployed. But no. And so the issue was cooking, brawling, ever getting hotter. And then the West even then did not want to introduce when on the 15th of January there were these 45 people massacred, and it was not guerrilla fighters. Yeah, these were mostly, if ever they were armed, they were basically village civilians, farmers. Yeah, and the myth that there was a huge UGK ready and equipped to fight, there were some fighters, sure. But most of them were civilians who maybe had some arms, but it was not a serious military force in that sense. Yeah. It was basically the terror regime of Milosevic who killed a lot of poor and innocent people, who has done all these atrocities, especially from 98 onwards on the 5th of March and to the 15th of January, to this terrible day in Rajak. Yeah. And they had this intention to make it clear that the Albanian population is not welcomed, and that they will live in terror and in fear of their life, and that they better leave. And that was basically what was going on. And may this day live in infamy forever. And I'm very happy that then later what happened was that there was a response to that. But again, the West was so hesitant. Yeah? Instead of really intervening decisively, what happened was that was this negotiation of Rambouillet. And in Rambouillet, the West was offering so many concessions to Milosevic, it was unbelievable. Yeah? As if he would have had the right to have Kosovo. Because it was basically a colonial conquest from the year 1912 onwards. It was most terrible mistreatment and genocide from 1912 onwards, all the time, and that Serbia or Yugoslavia had the control of Kosovo, and that it was until 66 under American pressure some form of softer reality. But it was constant suppression, apartheid, ethnic cleansing, and state terror against the Albanians. Yeah. So, but even after Rajak, because it was not exactly that Rajak led to the NATO intervention, don't get me wrong. In Rajak, there was, of course, the investigation. No surprise, the Belorussians were on the Yugoslavian side and said it was a guerrilla attack and so. Then, of course, was this OSCE mission, which established the fact and so the victims and what. When you can make a difference between a guerrilla fighter and a child and an old man or a woman, yeah? I mean, please. Yeah. So it was very clear that this was state terror against the people, which were citizens of that state. Yeah? So in that case, I think already intervention would have been justified, but no. Then came all these Western appeasement efforts in Rambouillet with this very soft idea to have autonomy for Kosovo, and to have all this kind of, yes, you can keep Kosovo, but treat the people nicer. Yeah, but that was never the intention of Milosevic ever. Yeah? So he wanted to have the land, but not the people. And so he was in no way ready for any compromise. And that was also why Rambouillet failed. And when Rambouillet failed, and then the start, because in the meantime, and the expulsion of ethnic Albanians, of Albanians in Kosovo, of Yugoslavian citizens. You have to always see, they were the citizens of the state which Milosevic had the welfare obligation. That's what you have when you are the president or the prime minister of a state. You cannot bomb your own population. You cannot expel them from the country. But that's what they did. Milosevic expelled over 800,000, possibly a million, of his own citizens in the neighboring countries, because due to their ethnicity or religion, he didn't like them and he hated them and he wanted the land without the people. And so he committed all these crimes under the watch of the international community, and only then gradually in the march, gradually and very carefully, there was a military answer. But what happened? Obviously, you know, the Yugoslavian army was battle-hardened. They were the people who were fighting in Bosnia for 3 years and before in Croatia and in Slovenia. They were also well equipped. They have their own defense industry. They were also supplied with Belarusian and Russian equipment. So they were battle-hardened and prepared for that. Yeah? And the answer was very soft in the beginning. So gradually, you know, there was still continuing of ethnic cleansing, and there was no way that they were going out of Kosovo or establishing some kind of normalcy from the state executive system, that they stopped this violence and expulsion of the people. And then only gradually, then the NATO had to somehow step up the campaign. And that was going in steps and steps. It was not, no way there was a plan to start to extend this on the territory of Serbia proper. But simply there was also no intention of the Yugoslavian army to withdraw from Kosovo. And also it was like this, to my assessment, it was very clear that also the UCK was a not really trained small group of it was not a strong land army in a sense. Yeah? And just with air power, you can only do so much damage. And to a well-entrenched enemy like the Yugoslavian army in Kosovo was, they had tunnels, they had this long digged out. This was always the border territory of Yugoslavia to Albania. Albania was the enemy state as an ally to first the Soviet Union and then to communist China. So this whole territory, and because of its ethnic composition, it was always heavily militarized. So that was a lot of tunnels, a lot of caves, a lot of military installation. So basically the real firepower of the American airplanes in Kosovo itself was not very effective. In 1999, actually, the Kumanovo treaty, a lot of the Yugoslavian army personnel and staff and material, they were relatively intact withdrawing from Kosovo. What really made the difference is that then the decision was taken in May 1999 to extend the air campaign towards Serbia proper and also bomb civilian infrastructure, and I say strategically bomb civilian infrastructure in Belgrade proper. Because the Serbian population never was told the truth of the occupation regime in Serbia, and they believed the myth of some long ago Byzantine reality that they were the rightful owners to Kosovo, which many still believe today. And then they were living in this kind of illusion that everything was right and just the terrorists of Albanians were misbehaving. And obviously, once the bombs struck Belgrade and the bridges and the main defense installations and also the electricity grid and all this civil infrastructure, many of the Serbian population who were totally fine with genocide in Bosnia and also were approval of this land-only strategy in Kosovo, they were totally surprised that they are taken accountable now for these crimes committed in their name by their terrorist government. And obviously it's similar. I'm sure that many German citizens in the year 40, 41, 42, or also the Austrians, I can say, because my grandparents were also very surprised in the year 44, when then the American bombers who were already stationed in Italy could reach Vienna and started to bomb also here the military installations. And I'm sure that many of the civilian population of Nazi Germany, and Austria was part of that, were also completely surprised that suddenly their houses and their railway stations and their energy and defense industry were suddenly the subject of American bombs. But, you know, this is it when you somehow endorse or live by tragic coincidence under a terror regime. There must be then some remedy. And this is, of course, very hard. It was hard for the Serb middle class to understand why the American bombs and the NATO bombs are striking their civilian infrastructure. But it was the right thing to do because they were endorsing such a terror regime. And if you endorse a terror regime, then there must be the international community attacking. Yeah? And this is the only way, because how else? It was no way to talk Milosevic out of Kosovo and out of his kind of terror regime, which he had. And by the way, let's be very clear, it was the liberation also of the Serbs. The Serbs were liberated by the NATO intervention from this terror regime of Milosevic, which was occupying them ultimately for too long. And they were the first time they became a democracy on the 5th of October 2000, when the revolution came, which was a direct result of the defeat of the Milosevic regime on the battlefields of Kosovo, but also by the strategic bombing of the civilian infrastructure, which was, of course, extremely humiliating for the Serb state. Yeah? And it was rightfully so, because they committed many atrocities, genocides in Bosnia, war crimes in Kosovo, remember Vukovar and Dubrovnik, but very many and terrible atrocities on the battlefields of Kosovo. And the Rajak massacre, I call it the Rajak genocide. There is many sophisticated debates about what is a genocide. I don't want to go into it. I call it a genocide when a state organized system commits terror in a state-sponsored massive amount. Yeah, that's, I think, maybe they're more legally correct. But anyhow, that's the, for the people who die, it makes very little difference, these definitions. It's a genocide. It was apartheid before. And it was good that NATO had the courage, and the Western leaders, they have learned already from Bosnia what is exactly the consequence of non-action. And it took 3 years of massacres by the Serb terrorists, who were basically the same guys. Yeah, and don't get it wrong, the guys who were the commanders of the Rajak massacre, they are living today fine in Belgrade and give interviews to the public. I've seen the interview. You can go on YouTube. Because Serb Special Forces, he is telling his version. If you're interested in his version, it's online. I tell you my version, and I think it's the right one. So I'm actually confident. And actually, I know it. I lived many years. I lived also in Serbia, in Montenegro, in Kosovo. And I tell you the facts as I see it. Yeah? And this is the story of the Kosovo genocide. I think that every European should know that. Every European should not somehow be confused by this kind of Russian-Serbian propaganda of victimhood. The West has done something bad to them, stolen them Kosovo, and created all this artificial evidence of whatever kind of massacres which are not true. You know, that the president of Kosovo, of Serbia today, Mr. Vucic, I've talked a lot about him already, he is denying that this took place, yeah? And, you know, I told already that his gendarmerie commander is living in Belgrade now as a retired man, gives interviews and tells his perspective how it was to kill 45 people. And the Rajak massacre was only one of 20. Yeah? But it's, you know, I think it's good to have one day which is crystallizing the brutality of the Milosevic terror regime in Kosovo and the suppression. And this was, and this massacre day, this genocide day, the 15th of January, never forget it. It shall live in infamy, and it shall never be forgotten, because it is a terrible thing, similar like the 11th of July, 95, when they have already committed these terrors in Srebrenica. Terrible, but these are the facts of European history. So, what else to say? I think I mentioned most of the things about the 15th of January. I will basically talk also about Kosovo history on a lot of occasions, together with Ukraine history, because this podcast is very much about also bringing the history of the victims of Serb and Russian aggression to you, because everybody should know this perspective. It's not so often told. It's maybe not so clear to many Europeans, and I want to make it very clear who is responsible for the Balkan Wars, and it's Milosevic, and who is responsible for the Ukraine Wars since 2014, that's Putin, and there is no kind of other perspective, understandable, argumentable, for my view. So if you have, please also share it with me. I'm always discussing these issues on Twitter and on YouTube as well. And I call, obviously now, let me say a more nicer finishing statement, because I'm very much for Serbia to join NATO, to join the EU, to adopt the euro. I'm very much for peaceful cooperation in the Balkans. I personally met Mr. Cinčić in 2097 and 98, and also, no, I didn't meet him when he was in power. No, I met him once in Vienna. So I'm very much, you know, I'm totally, absolutely, 100% for a European Serbia. But what is necessary to be a European Serbia is the inner cleaning of the past, the coming to terms with past crimes, yeah, understanding the reality of what was committed in one's nation, especially the same like with the Germans and the Austrians. It was so painful to clean our guilt. But this guilt must be cleaned also in the Serbian nation. It must be clear that these crimes were committed to get land and to kill people and to have land for what? In the name of some monasteries. Yeah? This is exactly the reality. It was a terrorist regime. It killed so many people on the battlefields of the Balkans in the 90s. And it was every single time before also a terror regime. Yeah? There was nothing good about Yugoslavia. And this is important to understand. I will make a specific podcast about the economic and political terror history of Yugoslavia as well. And I will explain all these things and this understanding also to share it with you. So good. What I say, the future is very good. There is an opportunity for everybody to be in NATO, for everybody to be in EU, and everybody also in the Euro. And I'm very much calling for Serbia to join NATO in 2024 together with the Republic of Kosovo, to recognize each other mutually, to join the EU as a consequence of that, and to adopt the Euro and to make peace with Serbia. But Serbia needs to come to terms with its past, understand and repent and regret the crimes it committed in the name of the nation. Whenever that was a different regime, yeah, everybody, nobody will approach it to modern day Serbia and the Serbs. But, you know, only in the case there is genuine regret and understanding. And the expression of an apology is the first step for that, and not the denial of genocide. Because a denial of genocide, we don't need states like this in the European Union. Be sure about it. So, never forget the 15th of January.